Chapter 35. Pay the publishers to buy the privilege, or me to sell it. Bret Hart sold his novel, same size as mine, I should say, to Scribner's Monthly for $6.500, publication to begin in September, I think, and he gets a royalty of 7.12% from Bliss in book form afterwards. He gets a royalty of 10% on it in England, issued in serial numbers, and the same royalty on it in book form afterwards, and is to receive an advance payment of £500 the day the first number of the serial appears. If I could do as well, here, and there, with mine, it might possibly pay me, but I seriously doubt it, though it is likely I could do better in England than Brett, who is not widely known there. You see, I take a vile, mercenary view of things, but then my household expenses are something almost ghastly. By and by I shall take a boy of 12, and run him on through life in the first person, but not Tom Sawyer, he would not be a good character for it. I wish you would promise to read the MS of Tom Sawyer sometime, and see if you don't really decide that I am right in closing with him as a boy and point out the most glaring defects for me. It is a tremendous favor to ask, and I expect you to refuse, and would be ashamed to expect you to do otherwise. But the thing has been so many months in my mind that it seems a relief to snake it out. I don't know any other person whose judgment I could venture to take fully and entirely. Don't hesitate about saying no, for I know how your time is taxed, and I would have honest need to blush if you said yes. Osgood and I are owing for the Puppy G on infringement of trademark. To win one or two suits of this kind will set literary folks on a firmer bottom. I wish Osgood would sue for stealing Holmes' poem. Wouldn't it be gorgeous to sue R for petty larceny? I will promise to go into court and swear I think him capable of stealing peanuts from a blind peddler. Ears ever, Clemens. Of course Howells promptly replied that he would read the story, adding, colon, you've no idea what I may ask you to do for me someday. I'm sorry that you can't do it for the Atlantic, but I succumb. Perhaps you will do boy number 2 for us. Clemens, conscience-stricken, meantime, hastily put the MS out of reach of temptation. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. July 13, 1875. My dear Howells, just as soon as you consented I realized all the atrocity of my request, and straightway blushed and weakened. I telegraphed my theatrical agent to come here, and carry off the MS and copy it. But I will gladly send it to you, if you will do as follows. Dramatize it, if you perceive that you can, and take, for your remuneration, half of the first $6,000 which I receive for its representation on the stage. You could alter the plot entirely, if you chose. I could help in the work, most cheerfully, after you had arranged the plot. I have my eye upon two young girls who can play Om and Uck. I believe a good deal of a drama can be made of it. Come, can't you tackle this in the odd hours of your vacation, or later, if you prefer? I do wish you could come down once more before your holiday. I'd give anything. Ears ever, Mark. Howells wrote that he had no time for the dramatization, and urged Clemens to undertake it himself. He was ready to read the story, whenever it should arrive. Clemens did not hurry, however, the publication of Tom Sawyer could wait. He already had a book in press, the volume of sketches new and old, which he had prepared for Bliss several years before. Sketches was issued that autumn, and Howells gave it a good notice, possibly better than it deserved. Considered among Mark Twain's books today, the collection of sketches does not seem especially important. With the exception of the Frog story, and the Rue story, most of those included might be spared. Clemens himself confessed to Howells that he wished, when it was too late, that he had destroyed a number of them. The book, however, was distinguished in a special way. It contains Mark Twain's first utterance in print on the subject of copyright, a matter in which he never again lost interest. The absurdity and injustice of the copyright laws both amused and irritated him, and in the course of time he would be largely instrumental in their improvement. In the book his open petition to Congress that all property rights, as well as literary ownership, should be put on the copyright basis, and limited to a beneficent term of 42 years, was more or less of a joke, but, like so many of Mark Twain's jokes, it was founded on reason and justice. He had another idea that was not a joke. An early plan in the direction of international copyright. It was to be a petition signed by the leading American authors, asking the United States to declare itself to be the first to stand for right and justice by enacting laws against the piracy of foreign books. It was a rather utopian scheme, as most schemes for moral progress are, in their beginning. It would not be likely ever to reach Congress, but it would appeal to Howells and his Cambridge friends. Clemens wrote, outlining his plan of action, to W.D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, September 18, 1875. My dear Howells, my plan is this. You are to get Mr. Lowell and Mr. Longfellow to be the first signers of my copyright petition. You must sign it yourself, and get Mr. Whittier to do likewise. Then Holmes will sign, he said he would, if he didn't, have to stand at the head. Then I'm fixed. I will then put a gentlemanly chap under wages, and send him personally to every author of distinction in the country, and corral the rest of the signatures. Then I'll have the whole thing lithographed, about 1,000 copies, and move upon the President and Congress in person, but in the subordinate capacity of a party who is merely the agent of better and wiser men, men whom the country cannot venture to laugh at. I will ask the President to recommend the thing in his message, and if he should ask me to sit down and frame the paragraph for him, I should blush, but still I would frame it. Next I would get a prime leader in Congress. I would also see that votes enough to carry the measure were privately secured before the bill was offered. This I would try through my leader and my friends there. And then if Europe chose to go on stealing from us, we would say with noble enthusiasm, American lawmakers do steal, but not from foreign authors, not from foreign authors. You see, what I want to drive into the congressional mind is the simple fact that the moral law is who shall not steal no matter what Europe may do. I swear I can't see any use in robbing European authors for the benefit of American booksellers, anyway. If we can ever get this thing through Congress, we can try making copyright perpetual, someday. There would be no sort of use in it, since only one book in 100 millions outlives the present copyright term. No sort of use, except that the writer of that one book have his rights, which is something. If we only had some god in the country's laws, instead of being in such a sweat to get him into the Constitution, it would be better all around. The only man who ever signed my petition with alacrity, and said that the fact that a thing was right was all sufficient, was Rev. Dr. Bushnell. I have lost my old petition, which was brief, but will draft and enclose another not in the words it ought to be, but in the substance. I want Mr. Lowell to furnish the words and the ideas to, if he will do it. Say Redpath beseeches me to lecture in Boston in November, telegraphs that Beecher's and Nast's withdrawal has put him in the tightest kind of a place. So I guess I'll do that old owing it lecture over again in November, and repeat it 2 or 3 times in New York while I am at it. Can I take a carriage after the lecture and go out and stay with you that night, provided you find at that distant time that it will not inconvenience you? Is Aldrich home yet? With love to you all ears ever, S50. See, of course the petition never reached Congress. Holmes' comment that governments were not in the habit of setting themselves up as high moral examples, except for revenue, was shared by too many others. The petition was tabled, but Clemens never abandoned his purpose, and lived to see most of his dream fulfilled. Meantime, Howells' notice of the sketches appeared in the Atlantic, and brought grateful acknowledgement from the author. to W.D. Owls, in Boston. Hartford, October 19, 1875. My dear Owls, that is a perfectly superb notice. You can easily believe that nothing ever gratified me so much before. The newspaper praises bestowed upon the Innocents Abroad were large and generous, but somehow I hadn't confidence in the critical judgment of the parties who furnished them. You know how that is, yourself, from reading the newspaper notices of your own books. They gratify a body, but they always leave a small pang behind in the shape of a fear that the critics' good words could not safely be depended upon as authority. Yours is the recognized critical court of last resort in this country. From its decision there is no appeal, and so, to have gained this decree of yours, before I am 40 years old, I regard as a thing to be right down proud of. Mrs. Clemens says, tell him I am just as grateful to him as I can be. It sounds as if she were grateful to you for heroically trampling the truth underfoot in order to praise me, but in reality it means that she is grateful to you for being bold enough to utter a truth which she fully believes all competent people know, but which none has heretofore been brave enough to utter. You see, the thing that gravels her is that I am so persistently glorified as a mere buffoon, as if that entirely covered my case, which she denies with venom. The other day Mrs. Clemens was planning a visit to you, and so I am waiting with a pleasurable hope for the result of her deliberations. We are expecting visitors every day now, from New York, and afterward some are to come from Elmira. I judge that we shall then be free to go Bostonward. I should be just delighted, because we could visit in comfort, since we shouldn't have to do any shopping. Did it all in New York last week, and a tremendous pull it was too. Mrs. 100 said the other day, we will go to Cambridge, if we have to walk, for I don't believe we can ever get the Owlses to come here again until we have been there. I was gratified to see that there was one string, anyway, that could take her to Cambridge. But I will do her the justice to say that she is always wanting to go to Cambridge, independent of the selfish desire to get a visit out of you by it. I want her to get started now, before children's diseases are fashionable again, because they always play such hob with visiting arrangements. With love to you all, yours ever, S50. Clemens. Mark Twain's trips to Boston were usually made alone. Women require more preparation to go visiting, and Mrs. Clemens and Mrs. Howell seem to have exchanged visits infrequently. For Mark Twain, perhaps, it was just as well that his wife did not always go with him. His absent-mindedness and boyish ingenuousness often led him into difficulties which Mrs. Clemens sometimes found embarrassing. In the foregoing letter they were planning a visit to Cambridge. In the one that follows they seem to have made it with certain results, perhaps not altogether amusing at the moment. To W.D. Owls, in Boston. October 4, 75. My dear Owls, we had a royal good time at your house, and have had a royal good time ever since, talking about it, both privately and with the neighbors. Mrs. Clemens' bodily strength came up handsomely under that cheery respite from household and nursery cares. I do hope that Mrs. Howells didn't go correspondingly down, under the added burden to her cares and responsibilities. Of course I didn't expect to get through without committing some crimes and hearing of them afterwards, so I have taken the inevitable lashings, and been able to hum a tune, while the punishment went on. I ought it for letting Mrs. Howells bother and bother about her coffee, when it was good deal better than we get at home. I ought it for interrupting Mrs. 100 at the last moment and losing her the opportunity to urge you not to forget to send her that MS when the printers are done with it. I ought it once more for personating that drunken Colonel James. I ought it for mentioning that Mr. Longfellow's picture was slightly damaged. And when, after a lull in the storm, I confessed, shamefacedly, that I had privately suggested to you that we hadn't any frames, and that if you wouldn't mind hinting to Mr. Houghton, and see, the madam was simply speechless for the space of a minute. Then she said, "How could you, youth? The idea of sending Mr. Howells, with his sensitive nature, upon such a repulsive oh, Howells won't mind it. You don't know Howells. Howells is a man who she was gone. But George was the first person she stumbled on in the hall, so she took it out of George. I was glad of that, because it saved the babies. I've got another rattling good character for my novel. That great work is mulling itself into shape gradually. Mrs. Clemens sends love to Mrs. Howells. Meantime, she is diligently laying up material for a letter to her. Ears ever mark. The earage of this letter was Mark Twain's colored butler, a valued and even beloved member of the household, a most picturesque character, who need day came to wash windows, as Clemens used to say, and remained 18 years. The fiction of Mrs. Clemens' severity he always found amusing, because of its entire contrast with the reality of her gentle heart. Clemens carried the Tom Sawyer MS to Boston himself, and placed it in Howells' hands. Howells had begged to be allowed to see the story, and Mrs. Clemens was especially anxious that he should do so, as he had doubts as to certain portions of it, and had the fullest faith in Howells' opinion. It was a gratifying one when it came. Howells wrote, "I finished reading Tom Sawyer a week ago, sitting up till 1 a.m. to get to the end, simply because it was impossible to leave off. It's altogether the best boy's story I ever read. It will be an immense success. But I think you ought to treat it explicitly as a boy's story. Grown-ups will enjoy it just as much if you do. And if you should put it forth as a study of boy character from the grown-up point of view, you give the wrong key to it. The adventures are enchanting. I wish I had been on that island. The treasure-hunting, the loss in the cave, it's all exciting and splendid. I shouldn't think of publishing this story serially. Give me a hint when it's to be out, and I'll start the sheep to jumping in the right places," meaning that he would have an advance review ready for publication in The Atlantic, which was a leader of criticism in America. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.